let's jump into to this next part. We're actually jumping ahead in the outline, and we're going to cover lesson five. So that's what we're covering now. Again, the main reason I'm doing this is so we can have it on the audio. So you guys are kind of our guinea pigs today. And so we're going to cover this. It'll be on the audio from here going forward. If you come to the next premarital seminar, we'll cover lessons three and four. So that'll be the whole. So I'm going to go through lesson five and just give some biblical principles, sex according to God's plan. Also want to just highlight for you, there's a homework assignment on this, which is at the top. That's to read Ed Wheat's Intended for Pleasure, chapters 1-6. Again, do that 1 to 2 weeks before your wedding. I recommend waiting until that point to read the book. It's helpful, but there are things in there that sometimes you read it and it can be unhelpful if you're reading that too far in advance of your wedding. So it's a helpful book, and just goes through a lot of things in there that we won't cover in this class. So make sure you read that. And then ideally you're having that third counseling session where you're talking through this in that book, a week or two before your wedding as well. So that's ideal. I know sometimes life happens, you're not able to set up those counseling in the exact time, but be good, try and work through the material like that. You can do the counseling after you're married. We have very few couples get all their counseling sessions done before their wedding. Again, that's the ideal way to do it, but if it doesn't work, don't feel bad. Just come back and finish those counseling sessions later. You'll still benefit a lot from that, even after your meeting. Some people have said we probably benefited more, having it after we've been married and we had a few issues come up. So just connect with the counselors three times. I think you'll really benefit from that time. So what I want to do in this lesson is just cover some the biblical teaching on sex. There's so much confusion on this topic in our culture. So I want to give some principles that are going to help you in this season to prepare for your season of being married. So we'll go through this. Sex according to God's plan. We're going to look at the biblical teaching on this first. And first thing to see is that sex, it is part of God's plan. We read the cultural mandate in lesson one. I'm going to read it again here. It says, God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the heavens, over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him male and female. And God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion. So what we see here is this cultural mandate to have dominion and have children, to offspring, to multiply. It's the first command given to people. We call it the cultural mandate. Theologians call it the cultural mandate because it's these two basic things are essential to life in every culture. No matter what culture you're in, there's work and there's marriage. As what you see here, the multiplying is clearly part of this command. Well, multiplying is a part of that command. We see that sex, it's part of God's purpose for people. It's a basic part of humanity's call to honor him. So we see that in Genesis 1, Genesis 2:24, the one flesh union that clearly implies a sexual relationship. It's not just a sexual relationship, but that is a part of that union. A man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. So we see it taught there. So we see that sex, it is part of God's plan. Let me just go through a couple implications of seeing that. When we see that, we see it's part of God's created order, and it should be embraced as part of that order. There's so many different views of sex in the culture. A lot of times you see just too much weight being put on that, and it distorts what it's meant to be. Sometimes we see those distortions and we push back. We think, well, that's just wrong. So that's being used in a wrong way. So, well, it must be bad. You see the same thing, sex, alcohol, something can be used to God's glory. it's also very easily distorted. You could just go through a lot of things, maybe certain types of work. You could see, well, that's just wrong. This a used car salesman, they're always ripping people off. It's a bad job. No, that job, it can be good, it can be redeemed. It just needs to be used in the right way, done to God's glory. And so we see that here with sex too. And like other things, sex finds its proper orientation by looking to God for its purpose and place. So that's what one of the implications of this topic is. When we see that it's part of God's purpose, then we need to embrace it as God has designed it and not how other people have distorted it. So we need to be renewed in our understanding of it. Read this quote by Andres Kostenberger. It says, "Sex is such an important part of our lives, though not as important as some might suggest, that it seems appropriate for us as Christians to reflect theologically on this vital subject, not merely because, like any other area of our lives, we want to submit our sexual practice to the Lordship of Christ, but we want to understand God's purpose for sex, for His glory, and for our own good." So we saw in Genesis 1, life is about living for the glory of God, honoring Him first and foremost in all that we do. When you understand that, marriage makes sense, work makes sense, and all the details of those parts of our lives make sense in that plan as well. Sex is a part of that. See, we find our identity in God, not sex. That's an important thing. You know, in our culture today, you watch the news, you look at TV, you know, whatever's happening on YouTube, you know, just so many things where there's so much confusion on this topic. And I think the reason there's a lot of confusion on it is because people have sought to build their identity on this. And it's like when you build a house, you know, you put a foundation on the bottom. The foundation supports everything else. If you were to put your frame and then your roof and then put the foundation on the top, the framing can't support that concrete foundation on the top of the roof. It's going to press down and it's going to distort all the structures of your house, right? Well, the same thing when, you know, things like marriage, you're not to find your identity in your spouse. If you do, there's going to be problems. You're not to find your identity in work. If you do, there's going to be problems. Same thing with sexuality. If you find your identity in sex, it's not meant to support your identity. Only God is able for us to find our identity in Him. Only He can do that. When we look to other things, there's going to be distortions. There's going to be problems. And we see our culture struggling in huge ways because they're trying to find their identity in other things. Sex finds its proper place when we find our identity and purpose in God. So only God is big enough to define all we are. Only He is worthy for us to image and reflect and seek to find our identity in Him. So we need to find it in Him, and when we do, the other things fall into place. So sex is part of God's purpose for people. Letter B, we'll just talk about sex that is good. Sex is part of God's creation. Its goodness is assumed in the numerous references to creation. So Genesis 1, God is creating the world, and you see it's good. You see the man's response to the woman. It's good. So you see it implied in all those things. Well, sex is clearly a part of that. So it's part of God's good design. We see the goodness in that the man and woman were naked and unashamed in Genesis 2:25. So sex is good, not bad. It's sin that taints and distorts sex like it does all other parts of creation. So we see sin tainting everything. It taints marriages. It taints how people work. It taints all those. Well, it also does the same thing with sex. It's created good, but sin taints it. So the problem isn't sex. The problem isn't marriage. The problem is sin. And so we need to make that distinction because we see a lot of abuses in our culture and people have different responses to that. Sometimes you see it and you think, well, we shouldn't give into that at all. It's just wrong. We need to just, you know, cut it off completely. And that's not God's intention for it. It's to be done to his glory in a way that He has designed it to work. So we see the goodness of it repeatedly throughout Genesis 1. Another thing, there's a whole book of the Bible that is about a relationship between man and woman, the Song of Songs. It celebrates the wonderful, delightful, and powerful love between a man and woman. What's neat about this book is not just the way these two lovers are celebrating one another. It certainly does that. The implication of that is that whatever was lost in the fall, it can be regained. That's what Song of Songs, one of the things it's teaching is that while sin distorts, God is redeeming things. And you can see the wonderful intention that God had between a man and woman in the very beginning, though it's been distorted, though you see so many instances in the Bible of it done wrong and wrongly used, there's also this hope that this wonderful relationship can be had, this wonderful marriage relationship between a husband and wife, not just married and in an unfortunate bond, but when you read the Song of Solomon, you just see just a delight, just an overflow of love for one another. That can be had, and we see more clearly how that can be had. It's through Christ and what he's done for us. So Song of Song, it's a wonderful book that teaches us how God can redeem things in the world. Proverbs 4, you read the Proverbs, you also see just how it celebrates God's goodness and just the goodness of sex. Let's see, there was a quote I was going to read here. No, we'll skip down. Well, we'll jump to implications for the sake of time. Implications. You shouldn't think sex is bad, but that sex outside of marriage is bad. Again, there's a right and wrong way to honor the Lord in sexuality. When you're married, it's good and appropriate to enjoy. The marriage bed should be held in honor, and that should happen before you're married, and it happens after you're married too. And that's where, I know, you hear in the culture so much, it's like, oh, well, just, you know, try it out, you know, get to know each other before you make such a big commitment as marriage. And it's like, no, that just undermines so much of the commitment and trust that God intends there to be in marriage. And so that's where you see, you know, as you honor God before you're married, it's laying a foundation for you to honor him after you're married. You're learning to trust each other, and that transfers over, and it transfers over and it endures in your marriage. This quote by Kostenberger on 84, I'm sorry, page 39. Let me read this. It says, as Christian married couples engage in sex under Christ's lordship, they will experience wholeness rather than brokenness, grace rather than guilt, true and lasting fulfillment rather than the mere temporary and fleeting gratification that comes from attempting to enjoy the Creator's good gifts apart from their acknowledging the Creator himself and respecting his creative purposes. At the heart, therefore, sex in the service of God proceeds in the protected sphere of monogamous marriage. As Christopher Ashe observes, the proper ethical context in marriage is not a series of isolated acts of sexual union, but rather a lifetime of faithful union. Another great quote, just reminding us of what can be had with the grace of God. Despite what you've been through in the past, you know, there we can experience wholeness rather than brokenness, grace rather than guilt, lasting fulfillment rather than the mere temporary and fleeting gratification. So again, God's giving us direction on how sex can be expressed appropriately. There's a goodness to it, and it's to be done in a way that honors him. A lot of times our aversion to talk about this topic or deal with it, sometimes we've just seen it done wrong or things we've seen or experienced, and we just want to push away from it. Well, it's an important part of marriage, and it should be embraced, and we need to, you'll have to press into that as a couple, talking through some of those things. If there's things from the past that you're working through, heard one of the guys here, he just said, you know what, no one goes through life perfectly, and everybody brings baggages of some sort into their marriage. You have to work through those. This is certainly an aspect that we all have to work through things. Maybe it's mistakes we've made in the past. Maybe it's wrong ways of thinking about it. We need to bring our understanding in line with God's intention for it. I've seen some just different different experiences with different couples. Maybe they've had a life of immorality and they're trying to readjust to that. And I've seen sometimes that person gets married to someone who has been the total opposite, seen the abuse of sex and just wanted to go so far in the opposite direction, just, you know, have all their life thought it's bad. And okay, so how's that coming together? Well, both of them are having to realign their understanding of sex with God's intent for it, that it is good, is to be in the context of marriage and a way to communicate love and commitment to another. So it's realigning our thoughts with that, lining up with God's purposes for it. And just along those lines, as we talk about God, it's good aligning ourselves with it, just want to mention briefly a note about birth control. We'll give you some resources on that. There's an audio lesson on that topic. It's from a medical doctor where she just goes through. It's an informative one. It's a medical doctor who's a Christian, so she gives you an understanding of some of the different birth control and where some of them get questionable and or wrong. So I want you to make informed decisions on that. And again, you know, birth control, it's one of those things that it can be used in a right way, it can be used in a wrong way. And so we want you honoring the Lord in all that you do. So we've got an audio lesson that it's detailed in the syllabus, when to listen to that. It's available online, but just wanted to mention that. We'll also have some questions throughout the premarital program, just having you work through that. What's your conviction on birth control? What's appropriate? What's not appropriate? So again, just want one of you making biblically informed decisions on what you will and will not do. So, all right, letter C, sex is powerful. 1 Corinthians 6:16 says, "Do you not know that he who unites himself with a prostitute is one with her in body? For it is said the two will become one flesh." This verse, it shows just the powerful uniting effect that happens in sex. It's not just physical, but it has emotional and spiritual realities. This verse, it really looks back to the union God designed between one man and one woman, and it's saying something of that happens each time in sex. It's a powerfully uniting act. Tim Keller, how did he say it? He says the Bible opposes sex before marriage so strongly, not because it looks down on sex and devalues it, but because it puts such a strong emphasis on it, because it sees it's such a powerful act. And so we see that here. And so it's to be reminded, we need to be reminded that it is a powerful thing and we want to guard it and protect it. It's powerful, can also be fragile. And so we want to guard it, protect our relationship with one another. And that's really the implication of this. When we see the power of sex, just the place that it has, that God has put on it, we want to guard it and protect it. I'll read this quote. It says, "Modern people sometimes wonder why the Bible is so negative toward adultery. Why should a brief encounter be such a serious matter? The deepest answer, I think, is that adultery is covenant treason. Most people can understand why treason against one's government in times of war should be punished severely, even by death. But the family is more fundamental than the nation. It is the root of all corporate relationship. As such, it reflects our fundamental relation to God, so that the mentality of rebellion is the same in both covenants. One who would cheat on his spouse would also cheat on God. The same attitude leads to both kinds of sin." So we just see the significant, when you see the importance of sex, important place that God puts on it, we see how wrong it is to go against that. It's one of the most powerful, intimate, sensitive, vulnerable aspects of who we are. That's why we only share it with our spouse. Sex and relationships are fragile. We want to protect those. Again, keeping the marriage bed pure, honoring it. It's important to honor it now. It's important to honor it when you're married. Let's see. Letter D, sex and marriage. In marriage, each individual is called to care for, love, and serve the other. Sex is simply another opportunity to do that. We communicate love, care, and commitment through that. 1 Corinthians 7:2-5. It says, but because of the temptation of sexual immorality, each man should have his own wife, and each woman her own husband. The husband should give to his wife her conjugal rights, likewise the wife to her husband. For the wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another, except perhaps by agreement, for a limited time, that you may be devoted, may devote yourself to prayer, but then come together again so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Read this quote by Keller. He says, Paul is telling married Christians that mutual, satisfying sexual relations must be an important part of their life together. In fact, this passage indicates that sex should be frequent and reciprocal. So just a helpful way to think about it, that it's God's intention. Paul is telling them there's to be these mutual relations seeking to care for one another. We're not our own. We're sharing that with each other. Finances, housing space, but also just who we are. We're sharing that. A few implications of that. Sex and service, it's ultimately about, it's a way that we care for one another. It's an important and God-given means of expressing our love. We give our very selves to the other in service to them. There's a few quotes here. This first one, it says, if you choose to love according to God's way of loving, you will find yourself watching for needs you can meet in your mate. God will show you specific needs, actual needs, which you can rejoice in meeting. What you sow, you will reap. What you give will be returned. Again, just the biblical idea, you know, sex, it's just it's a small representation of your relationship to your spouse. It's the overflow of your relationship. You know, if your relationship is just about you getting what you want, getting your way, domineering, you know, just putting the other down, that's going to carry over in other ways, and it fosters a reluctance to one another, you know, being on guard. And that's not what God calls us to do. In marriage, it's about two coming together, reflecting the gospel, loving one another, laying down our lives for each other. And that overflows in many other ways. And this is another way that you see God's design. It makes sense. If you don't have that perspective and you view sexuality as just you getting what you want, it's going to hurt the other rather than love and bless them. And so we see God's design here making sense of sex within marriage. Letter B, you know, here as we think about sex and service, don't be surprised if sex is not always easy. Like serving, it can be hard. Just as you talk through, you have differences on dining options, differences on vacations, on what television show. You have different desires, different preferences, you know, different things like that. In those other areas, it's going to come to bear in sex as well. You know, I remember being on our honeymoon and, you know, we just had different ideas of, you know, what the day might behold. And I just remember thinking, I never thought we would have an argument about this. Why, you know, I thought this was going to be the easiest part. And, it was funny. We celebrated our 10-year anniversary and we went away and we were just talking about, hey, what's been the best thing in the last 10 years? What's been the best part of marriage? And all right, what's been one of the hardest parts? And my wife, we looked at each other like, yeah, it's sex, you know, because we have different, vacation away. What are we going to do? You know, different anticipations of it. You're probably going to experience that. Typically in marriage, one wants more and one wants less or different things like that. You respond differently in different situations. You know, sometimes there's you're feeling pressure in life and one wants to press into the couple and intimacy and feel their care and support. The other's feeling the pressures of life and just thinking, that's the last thing I want right now. And you're going to experience that. So don't be surprised when it's hard, when it's difficult. Seek to love one another, seek to understand one another, seek to serve one another. There's going to be a lot of things that you're going to have to work out in your relationship, but I just want to encourage you, you know, to talk about those things. Seems like every couple, you go through certain thing, difficult circumstances that really forces you to have to talk through things that you may not want to talk about. And I found that when you do that, you grow closer together in ways that you wouldn't have had without that. I think of maybe a few different family situations that we've had that caused us to really wrestle with things. It was like, I wish we didn't have this. But when we pressed into that, there was just a real goodness of us understanding the situation, of me trying to lead and care for her, of her wanting to support. You know, it was a wonderful time. Same thing with sex. It's one of the most personal things that we have. That's why it's hard to talk about. All right, just get that out. It's hard talking about this. It's hard talking about it with your spouse. But you're going to need to talk through these things because you're going to have differences on it. And when you have those times, it can really help you better understand one another. It'll grow your relationship. It'll be good. It'll be hard. I'm going to tell you that right now, but don't shy away from it. I think those who have the bigger difficulties are the ones who you feel embarrassed talking about it. You feel awkward. Well, if you're really trying to serve one another, understand one another, you're going to push those things aside and say, yeah, let's talk about it. Let's address this issue. Let's not let it go on. So just want to encourage you with that. It was helpful for us hearing from other people that they were struggling in this area. I've been in small groups where, all right, hey, what's everybody, what's going on? You know, what's hard? And nobody talks. And then finally, one couple shared, all right, we're struggling in this area because we're just thinking differently on it. And then everyone else, oh, that's where we are too, but we didn't want to say it. Every couple, you have struggles in different areas. This is another one. So when it comes up, just want to encourage you, talk through those things. Don't push it aside. Don't neglect it. It gets harder when you do that. Lastly, E here, sex as a consummation of marriage points to the consummation of all things. Just want to read this because I think it's a neat way that it can, we see the goodness of God's design, and yet it also gives us something to long for. By Piper, he says, you don't have to be an ascetic, and you don't have to be afraid of the goodness of physical pleasure to say that sexual intimacy and sexual union get their final meaning from what they point to. They point to ecstasies that are unattainable and inconceivable in this life. Just as the heavens are telling the glory of God's power and beauty, so sexual climax is telling the glory of immeasurable delights that we will have with Christ in the age to come. There will be no marriage there, but what marriage means will be there, and the pleasures of marriage 10 to the millionth power will be there. Just thought it's a really neat quote on this topic, just to see there's a goodness in it, and yet there's also, it helps us remember there's a longing for something more, something better when God brings heaven on earth. So just, you know, a little bit of advice here for this season. First, just want to encourage you, communicate with each other at the proper time. You know, when you're engaged, you're in the season of walking in purity, trying to guard your heart, guard your mind. It is a hard season because, you know, wow, this is the person I'm going to spend the rest of my life with. You're almost there. And yet before your brother and sister, or before your husband and wife, your brother and sister. So, you know, you want to keep treating each other like that. Be committed to purity. Most of you, it's coming up pretty soon, your wedding day. Be committed to that. Just wait. And so communicate at the proper time. It is probably not helpful talking about some of these things in, you know, right now, but as you get closer to your wedding day, it'll be important to talk through some of those things. Talk about what's our wedding night going to look like. Couples have different expectations of that. Guys are ready and girls can have some fear. And so it's just important, you know, talking through that. That's a great way. Guys just lead in that. It's always an awkward conversation, or it can be. But just talking through those things, you're going to better understand what the other's thinking, how you can care for them and love them in that. So again, you know, as the wedding day draws near, you know, 1 to 2 weeks, it's good to read Ed Wheat's book. You know, start talking through these things. The counseling material we give you, there's a couple questions that kind of prompt some of this. So talk about those things. And also, you know, just building your relationship. Focus on building your relationship now, having a healthy relationship now. That's what's most important. Focusing on loving, enjoying, caring for, supporting each other. You do that outside the bedroom, and that happens in the bedroom. And so, again, sex, it's an overflow of the relationship that you have with your spouse. So, again, right now, you're just trying to care for one another, honor one another. It's different now, but those things of caring for one another, honoring one another, those carry over. It'll get expressed differently later on, but if you focus on those now, it makes it easier when you're married. So, you know, commit to doing that. Commit to building your relationship with one another, and talking through these things at the appropriate time. Other thing, just, you know, in this topic, being patient with one another. Again, we talked about that in different aspects of you're getting to know one another, how to work with one another, to support one another. Same thing is going to happen with intimacy. You're getting to know each other. I remember when we first got married, I heard another guy who was married for a few years. He was giving another person advice, and he said, you know, it's just, you don't know what you're doing. He's like, you go to kiss her and you bump noses. It just happens. And so just loving one another, being patient with one another, focusing on your relationship and having a healthy relationship. That's the best thing that you can do for your spouse, is just seeking to care for them and love them. And the same things that give you a healthy relationship in general are going to be the things that give you a healthy relationship in intimacy and other ways. All right, that's the end. So it's been a long day. We've covered a lot of material. Let me pray, and then we might have time for a few questions. So, well, Lord, just thank you for this time. Thank you for these couples here. Lord, I know we've been through a lot, and I just pray that you would bless them. I just pray that they would be freshly encouraged by your design for life, for marriage, and all the things that are a part of that. And I pray that they'd be freshly encouraged by the hope that we have in Christ, that he's making us new, that you're changing us to be more like him. And we know that while there's difficulties and hard things in life, there is much joy to be had. And I just pray each couple would experience that now, today, and just that the grace of God would be evident in them and all that they do, that the fruit of the Spirit would be present in their lives. And just pray that they would enjoy that and give you all the glory for the joy that they experience. And so we pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.